So when I was like 7 or 8 years old, one of the highlights of my day would be going out to check the mail, which is weird. But if there was any type of mail for me, and what kind of 7-year old is getting mail? But if it would usually be like a manila envelope, and I would always know that would be an autograph. So even in a little goofy ass town of Pleasant Hill, California, I was trying to connect with movies and Hollywood, even at the age of 7. So let's talk autographs and some other stuff.
You are my density. You are my density.
First off, not necessarily an apology, but I may have been a little bit too hard on David Fincher and Christopher Nolan. I'm sure they heard the podcast, and I just don't want to hurt their feelings. But no, really. I mean, they are devoted. They're craftsmen. I mean, they are meticulous. So no insults in that way. Actually, my boss used to edit for David Fincher. And so I went to the set of Fight Club and Panic Room. And Fight Club is really cool. It was just in a huge soundstage, and they had kind of built the Fight Club's guys, their little house, you know, where they made the soap and all that stuff. And then there was a car kind of turned over on its side for when, like, the car crashes and stuff. I mean, it was pro. Damn, it's impressive. And I actually sat in the trailer with David Fincher and the editor when they were going through dailies and stuff. They were looking at the diner scene of Fight Club. And Fincher, I mean, he knew his shit. He was like, you know, yeah, I think the second take from the end was a good one from Brad. And then, you know, Edward kind of maybe take 4. And the guy, you know, he shoots like 50, 60, 70, 80 takes. So anyway, and Christopher Nolan, who I respect. And I saw him actually eating dinner. I was with my mom in L.A. I'm always with my mom wherever I am because no other girl will travel with me. But yeah, we were eating at the long shuttered Hatfields. Great place, super pro, just you know, not fine dining, but just classy. And he was sitting next to me, and I was like, oh my God, I was starstruck. And he went to the bathroom, and at some point when he came back, I was just staring at him. And I don't know if he just maybe thought it was someone that he knew, or just the fact that I was staring at him, he's like, he had to do something. So he was like, oh, hello. And so yeah, that was pretty cool. And then like 2 minutes later, Anne Hathaway came in and ran over and was talking to Christopher Nolan. Then my mom was starstruck. And I'm not a huge like Anne Hathaway fan, but there was something kind of magnetic about her. I mean, like she just looked, you know, almost not artificial, but there was like an electricity to her. So anyway. So yeah, I'm sure like Fincher and Nolan have some great movies left in them. They just need to pump the brakes a little bit and just, I don't know, get a little bit looser and not make their movies so goddamn long. But yeah, I mean, I think they've got it if they just listen to me. So back when I was a kid, and it was about 1845, no, I'm just kidding. But they used to have this thing called TV Guide, which was, you know, printed each week. There was no internet, obviously. And you would look at it. It would show you what's on TV for the week. And in the back of it, for some reason, they listed like agencies and stuff, William Morris Agency, Creative Artists Agency, all that stuff. And at bookstores, you could buy like, you know, celebrity addresses. It was more like agents. Like if you wanted to write to actors, you could write them care of their agents. So that's how I kind of started the process of writing to different people. And like most kids back in the day, I was obsessed with Star Wars. So I wrote to a bunch of different people from Star Wars. And actually Anthony Daniels, C-3PO. Said it weird. He wrote me back, and I got something from Harrison Ford. It just said Harrison Ford, nothing too exciting. Carrie Fisher said, "Galactically yours." But my favorite one was from Peter Cushing, who was kind of, you know, Darth Vader's right-hand man, and who got like digitally recreated for one of their more recent movies. I don't know, it was weird. But anyway, yeah, he just in this amazing English, not English, but just it was like the calligraphy, the way this guy wrote was so classy. And he said, "Dear Master DeAndre, I'm 7 years old. May God's blessing be with you always." So I've always I still treasure that letter. I mean, he was just a humongous English actor. He was in a bunch of Hammer horror movies and comedies and just tons, just one of the masters. And speaking of Carrie Fisher briefly, a couple months ago, me and my friend JB, we went to Forest Lawn, the one in Hollywood Hills, which is kind of a weirder one. There's the other ones that are like super huge. But Carrie Fisher is buried there next to her mom, Debbie Reynolds, who I think died like the next day. John Ritter from TV's Three's Company. And he was also in a great movie, Sling Blade. But yeah, he died fairly young. And so I looked at his grave, and Andy Gibb is there, and Liberace. But the funniest moment was me and my buddy were stoned. And like I said before, JB, when he gets stoned, he's out of it. So I was standing by Lou Rawls. He's buried in the wall there. And I was like, hey, look, Lou Rawls. And then so JB comes up. He's walking, like looking up, and just doesn't realize that there's like a stone memorial bench to someone. And he just walks right into it, like kneecaps himself. He was in such amazing pain for like 30 minutes later. But it was funny. And I was like extremely immature for my age, like physically and mentally. I always looked like 10 years younger than I was. So never too much luck with women when I was young. But when I saw the movie Blame It on Rio from 1984, the actress Michelle Johnson, she just blew me away. I mean, she was so pretty. She was actually under 18 when the movie was done, and they had to get some kind of special waiver for her to be naked in it. It was directed by Stanley Donen, who also directed Singing in the Rain and Charade. So it's not a great movie. It's a little bit unseemly, but, you know, great director. And Charade is actually amazing. It's from 1963 with Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn. Her husband gets killed and he has some kind of secret fortune, and the killers are trying to find it, and they're trying to, so Cary Grant and her are trying to escape the killers, and it's totally amazing, fun as hell. Blame It on Rio. It's like Michael Caine falls for Joseph Bologna's younger daughter, played by Michelle Johnson. It's just kind of depressing, and but she's amazing in it. And Demi Moore is in it also. She didn't make like a ton of more movies. She briefly had a relationship, I think, with Ray Liotta, who we'll discuss at some point because he's incredible. He's frightening, but amazing. And rest in peace, Ray Liotta. I also wrote to just some random TV shows. I have some autographs from the people from Hill Street Blues and Saint Elsewhere. And I got one from Robert De Niro, kind of Midnight Run era. Amazing movie, which will be talked about later. I have Bruce Boxleitner from Tron, the original Tron. And a weird one. There was this TV show called Voyagers where these guys would travel back in time. It wasn't on for very long. But the lead of it, his name was John Eric Hexum, and I think he was like screwing around with a prop gun at work on the set, and ended up, I guess it either had a blank or a bullet in it, but he shot himself and died. The kid in the TV show had one of the greatest names ever, Mino Peluce. I think it was MeenoPeluce. Mino Peluce. I'll never be able to forget that name. So anyway, my next female obsession was the actress Kelly LeBrock. She was in kind of one of her first movies was The Woman in Red, 1984, directed by Gene Wilder. And Gene Wilder is kind of this married schlub who tries to, like, you know, he's going to cheat on his wife. So he falls for Kelly LeBrock and just finds out it's way more harder to, you know, cheat than he thinks it would be. She's great in it, super pretty. And there's a great scene where Gene Wilder is trying to, like, you know, spruce himself up. He's trying to, like, you know, be more appealing. And he goes and gets a perm. Looks ridiculous. And he like, you know, walks into work kind of cool. And someone is just looking at him like, what the hell? So he runs into the bathroom and, like, you know, wets his hair out and tries to get the perm out. But, yeah, I mean, Gene Wilder was amazing. There was always, like, a little bit of a sadness to his characters. But, God, he was... His delivery was just so amazing, so incredible. But the movie that really, like, grabbed me and sealed the deal for Kelly LeBrock was Weird Science, directed by John Hughes, 1985. Anthony Michael Hall and Ilan Mitchell Smith are the two kind of nerds in it. And, you know, they're desperate to try and find a girlfriend. And so, like, with a computer program, and they got like bras on their heads, and they, when they're doing it, and they try to program a woman, like a, create the perfect woman. And Kelly LeBrock kind of like comes out in their, bedroom. And so she kind of takes them out on the town, and kind of is there, you know, like chaperone and stuff. And so everyone else is just like, whoa, who is this chick? Bill Paxton is in it, the late, great Bill Paxton. He plays Chet, the kind of dickhead older brother. And eventually she turns him into like a blob, just like this huge talking blob of shit, almost looks kind of like a Jabba the Hutt. And the two kind of dickhead high school guys that are always screwing with Anthony Michael Hall and Ellen are Robert Ressler and Robert Downey Jr. Robert Ressler was one of the leads of the original Nightmare on Elm Street, along with Johnny Depp. And Robert Downey Jr. is super funny in this. There's a scene where they're like, they try and convince the other, Anthony Michael Hall and Ellen, to create another woman. And so they've got the bras in their heads and the whole thing is happening. And there's like, you know, wind and lights and all this stuff. And then it's funny. Robert Downey Jr. is just kind of petrified. And he's like, I'm shitting in my pants. The other kind of amazing line that I've never forgotten is like after they all go out drinking and they're driving back, and they kind of like, they're driving really crazy, and Anthony Michael Hall falls and stuff. And so Kelly LeBrock is like, you know, are you okay? Something like that. And he's like, well, my nuts is halfway up my asshole, but other than that, I'm perfect. It is the most ridiculous line, but I've never forgotten it. Occasionally I'll say it to someone, and they don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Speaking of Anthony Michael Hall, of course, another classic John Hughes movie from 1984 is 16 Candles, with Molly Ringwald, where her parents kind of forget her birthday. And anyway, Anthony Michael Hall, and actually John Cusack is in it, they're just, you know, the total dorks in high school. And Anthony Michael Hall is kind of like the king of the dipshits. So he's kind of the you know, lord of the nerds. I was like that in high school a little bit. Like, I was able to kind of branch into the cooler people, but generally I was more on the nerd side. And I had zero sex appeal because I was like prepubescent looking. And I was also frightened by women. And so I went to the prom, and at the end of the night, when we're all in the limo and driving and we're about to drop off, you know, my date, I acted like I was asleep because I was just petrified to walk her to the door and not knowing, what the hell am I supposed to do? And anyway, I eventually woke up I was fake sleeping. So I got up and walked her to the door, and I didn't do anything. I think I hugged her. Like 2 weeks later, we got the prom pictures, you know, the official ones. And I'm holding her hand with two fingers, like I'm holding like something like plutonium. Like, I don't even want to like be holding her hand completely. It's the most embarrassing picture in the world. And of course it would only happen to me, and I didn't realize it when I was doing it. So that picture still exists somewhere. And I hope I never see it again. And actually, just for senior prom, I just straight up lied to people. I was like, I'm going to Chicago to see the Bulls play with Michael Jordan, just to kind of just nip it in the bud. Sorry, I got sidetracked there for a second. So I did end up writing to Kelly LeBrock, a pretty long letter. I think I made it sound like my life was horrible or something, but I had a great life. And I would sometimes leave my phone number on there, my parents' phone number, just like on the off chance someone would call. So one day my dad picked up the phone and he was like, hey, Mark, phone for you. Probably one of your friends, I don't know, someone with an accent. So I picked up the phone and it was like, hello, Mark, this is Kelly LeBrock. And I was like, hold on. And I just pulled the phone as far as I could with the cord, you know, turned and kind of went around the corner just to be as far away from my parents as I could. And she just was like, all I basically said the whole conversation was yes and no. You know, she was like, oh, I got your letter. And I was like, yes. And she was like, yeah, it was a really good one. Yes. She said a couple other things, and I just said yes and no. Finally, at the end, I think the only thing I said was, can I get an autograph? And she was like, yes, yes. And so I hung up and told my parents. I was like, that was Kelly LeBrock. My dad was really pissed because he also liked her. He was like, God damn it. she did end up sending a picture. So after that, she didn't do a ton of movies, and she got involved with Steven Seagal. I think they got married, and that's never good, involving yourself with him. He made a couple decent movies. Hard to Kill was kind of fun, but kind of legendarily, he's kind of a dick. And I guess he was kind of sometimes hard on the stunt people. Like he would take it too far and stuff. And supposedly, although I don't know if it's true, like this old school stunt coordinator just saw that happening and just kind of beat him up. And the rumor is that Steven Seagal shit his pants. He was so torn up. But who knows? I used to love these Golan Globus. I think they were Israeli producers. They did a lot of action movies from the 1980s and 90s. A lot of goofy Chuck Norris ones, Missing in Action and Missing in Action 2, Delta Force, Invasion USA, and some later Charles Bronson movies. The legendary 1989 Kinjite has Bronson pulling out a dildo and sodomizing a villain. One of their more high-end movies was Barbe Schroeder's Barfly, which is kind of a take on Charles Bukowski, with Mickey Rourke as the Charles Bukowski character, and Faye Dunaway is in it. And there's a great line in that movie where he says, "I don't hate cops. I just seem to like it better when they're not around." But one of my favorites was 1985's American Ninja. There was also a couple sequels as well, but Michael Dudikoff was the lead character, but the character Jackson, this muscular African-American guy, is played by Steve James. And just the guy has such charisma and super fun. It's just made the movie a joy. Michael Dudikoff was kind of a dud. And Dud is in his name, Dudikoff, Dudikoff. Anyway, Steve James, he was just awesome. He actually had an uncredited cameo in Weird Science, and then he also was in Delta Force. He had a small part actually also in Robert Altman's The Player. He was one of the guards that was taking the Tim Robbins character to the gas chamber or something like that. But I got Steve James's information somehow, and so I wrote to him, and he wrote me the most amazing, long handwritten letter. It was so encouraging. I mean, I told him I wanted to be a director and this and that. And he was just you can do it. I hope to be directed in a film, directed by Mark one day. And he just kind of would tell me about what's going on. I mean, two or three page letters. I mean, just totally sincere, handwritten. I could just tell the guy was a great guy. And so I think I'd written him a letter and hadn't heard back from a bit. I was visiting Los Angeles at the time. It was before I moved there, and I was at Book Soup, and I was looking at the entertainment magazines, and I saw a little thing on there that said Steve James in memoriam. And I picked it up, and he had died of pancreatic cancer in 1993. So I was just like, wow, that's, sucks. Somehow on Facebook or something, I saw that his daughter had a Facebook page. So I wrote her and just told her all about it. And she was really appreciative and said, yeah, that sounds just like my dad. So anyway, seemed like a great guy and was super entertaining on screen. He had a part in 1984's The Brother from Another Planet, directed by the indie director John Sayles. And John Sayles is a long time stalwart of the indie movie scene, just kind of keeps busting stuff out. One of his bigger ones was Eight Men Out, about the Black Sox scandal with John Cusack. And Lone Star from 1996 it's worth a watch. It's got Chris Cooper, Chris Christopherson, Elizabeth Pena, and Matthew McConaughey. And it kind of flashes back from present day to past day. And Chris Cooper's dad was Matthew McConaughey, this legendary sheriff who may have killed someone. So he kind of tries to uncover it, and it's really cool. And actually, I did a scene from Lone Star in my acting class. The Coen Brothers' first movie was Blood Simple from 1984. It's kind of a film noir movie where John Getz is the lead, and Frances McDormand tries to get him to kill her husband. It's got Dan Hedaya in it, who was in Cheers, and then the great M. Emmett Walsh. But anyway, the lead actor, John Getz, a friend of mine, is like, that's his stepdad. And so whatever, I met him once and he was like, oh, you should take this acting class. This lady's really good. So I ended up taking it. And so I did a scene from Lone Star. It wasn't very good. I also did a scene from Drugstore Cowboy from 1989, Gus Van Sant's movie with Matt Dillon and Kelly Lynch. They're kind of like these druggies that rob drugstores, based on a true story. And it's got a great couple scenes with William S. Burroughs, the legendary beat author and heroin addict. But yeah, acting class, I don't know. I never could kind of get past certain blocks. I could, and the teacher knew it. I could get to a certain point, and then that was my limit. But Vincent D'Onofrio, the actor, she had actually taught him before. And so he would sometimes come to class. And one time he came to class to teach us. And great guy. I mean, super method, super. He puts in the work. Total pro. And so anyway, when I was doing my scene, I was done and I was just, you know, whatever. I thought it was fine. Nothing amazing. And so Vincent D'Onofrio's looking. He's like, you know what? You're very interesting. And I was like, okay. And he could walk down. He's like, yeah, you know what? You're even more interesting now that I see you. I'd put you in a movie. And then he kind of looks back at all the other actors who are really, you know, they're actors and they're into it and they're, you know, it's their thing. I was just doing it as a lark. But he's like, do all of you see this? And I was just like, oh my God, I'm like partially shitting my pants. This is awesome, but also ridiculous, embarrassing. But I was high after that for months after. And, yeah, it may have just been that night or for whatever reason. I don't think I'm that good, but, you know, whatever. For some reason, he liked it, and so there we go. And my final autograph was from Vincent Gallo of Buffalo 66 fame. I went and saw his movie, The Brown Bunny, with a girl I was not really seeing, but we would go on dates. The movie was kind of terrible, but he had, like, a book signing a couple weeks later. He had, you know, put together like a bunch of stills from the movie, The Brown Bunny. So I bought this stupid $70 book and I went to Agnes B or something, some high end fashion place in West Hollywood. And so I had him sign it, and I didn't know what the hell, you know, to have him sign it about. And I was like, oh, well, I saw the movie with this girl, Christina. I don't know. You could write something, you know, to her. And so it was kind of like, you know, dear Christina, Mark is very good. Very good. Be nice to Mark. Please be nice. Be very nice. Something like that. And so, like, after I got the book, I drove to her place. I was like, hey, look, I got this Brown Bunny book. She looked at the autograph and just freaked out. Like, which I understand. I mean, we weren't going out and I'm having Vincent Gallo write this thing about her. And so that pretty much was the end of our thing. So the autographs that brought me so much joy as a youngster ended up breaking up a relationship for me. Or, well, I thought it was a relationship. I don't think she thought it was one. But yeah, I mean, autographs were fun when I was younger. But, you know, you gotta get let go of some of those things if you're getting autographs. You know, when you're like after at the age of 16, it just starts to get a little bit weird. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and until next time, rest in peace, Steve James.